Today is the day. You're stuck at your desk in the same old dreary workplace. The phone won't stop ringing, your inbox is filling up, and you're faced with a to-do list that just keeps growing. You're stressed, you're exhausted, but today, things are going to change. Today, you're asking for a pay rise.
You scan the office floor until your eyes fix on your manager. They have no idea what's coming. You begin mouthing that brilliant speech you rehearsed in the mirror. But for some reason, it doesn't sound quite as strong as it did this morning. Maybe this is a bad idea. No, you're doing it.
You stand up, march over to your manager and demand to speak in private. Heart pounding with nerves and uncertainty. Are you sure about this? How are they going to react? Will this damage your relationship?
The moment arrives as you assert your demands, arguments fire back. Your confidence plummets as you're unsure of how to answer. You're told you're being unreasonable, and it's clear you're losing the battle.
A disaster. Angry, disappointed, even further away from that pay rise.
So what happened? Were you destined for rejection? What if we told you there could be a scientific answer and that we can give you the formula for getting that pay rise?
Hello and welcome to How to Hack the Brain. I'm Ziba Goddard.
And I'm Raffi March. This is the podcast where we figure out how to solve your everyday problems using behavioural science as our guide. In today's episode, we're going to give you the secrets to become a top negotiator so that you're fully prepared to secure a higher salary.
We'll be hearing from our actual boss, Jez Groom, about that time that Raffi gave a disastrous masterclass in how not to negotiate with your manager.
Thanks, Zeebs.
Didn't start well, didn't end well. We literally did not speak for 3 weeks.
Then we'll be chatting to expert negotiator Carl Marr to get all the top negotiation tips.
People go into a negotiation and then they think they can kind of wing it.
Most importantly, I'll be going undercover 8 years later to see if psychology can finally get me that pay rise.
So, Raffi, how much negotiation do you do in your day-to-day life?
Not much, really, Ziba. I would say most of the negotiating I do is deciding what to have for dinner or maybe compromising on what film I'm going to watch. It's rarely something as high stakes as asking for a pay rise.
This is the thing. We tend not to get much of a chance to hone our negotiation skills, which means that when we find ourselves actually needing to bargain for something really important, we're usually quite unprepared.
Yeah, and I think it's actually just a really hard thing to do, isn't it? There's so many emotions that are at play. You've obviously got your own self-worth. There's the workplace power dynamics. And then, of course, there's always that awkwardness that surrounds conversations around money. I think people often feel like to get that pay rise, they've got to leave their role.
Absolutely. And the data's telling the same story. In a recent article I fished out from Forbes, they reported that over half of workers feel that they're underpaid. And a recent 2022 poll by CNBC found that worker satisfaction is at an all-time low, with the majority of workers quitting their jobs and citing low pay as the reason.
Okay, so there's the emotions of the person asking for the pay rise. But let's think, aside from the operational costs required to increase someone's salary, there's also the person that's making that decision. They've also got their own experiences and their own psychological friction that's stopping them.
And I think the main one here is loss aversion. The fact that we feel the impact of losses twice as much as we enjoy acquiring an equal gain. So actually giving people a pay rise is twice as painful as the joy you'd feel about receiving one.
Exactly. And if we think about this neurologically, the part of our brain that's activated when we feel physical pain also lights up when we part with money. So it's actually physically uncomfortable for us to give a pay rise.
So that's why we call that the pain of paying.
Exactly. So it sounds like a lot of not obtaining a pay rise has to do with people not knowing how to approach it or maybe what steps to take.
Sound familiar, Raffi?
I guess you're talking about my terrible attempt to get a pay rise back in 2016.
I certainly am. So before we tell our listeners how to be top negotiators, let's hear an example of how not to negotiate, as told by our very own boss, Jez.
Oh, no.
Trigger warning, Raffi.
I deliberately had like a soft space. So it didn't have like a desk and a table that was high and we were sitting high, because often that can be quite confrontational. You hire a position. And so I put it into a room where there's couches, like two sofas opposite each other. You know, you've got a small low table. But, you know, she came in like this kind of like stomped in, like literally stomped in, literally with like papers in her hand. And I don't think, it didn't feel like she was ever sitting down and comfortable. It felt like she was kind of towering above me. We'd had a break-even year, so we hadn't generated any additional cash within the business. And we recognised that, so we put on the table like a 20% pay rise. And 20% is the ceiling, it's the maximum ceiling that certainly is like a rule of thumb that I've come across.
I think it's a ceiling that could be broken. I think we often call that the year we broke Rafi.
To have that thrown back in your face, to say that's not good enough, I want more, just came like a bit of a slap in the face. And also very confrontational. So it's kind of like papers, you know, arms on table, leaning in, angry faces.
Gosh, I'm starting to feel a bit like that now. I think I'd written down some notes because I was quite scared. It was my first official review, so I didn't want to come across as nervous. I wanted to be confident and assertive, but clearly I didn't play that right.
From my side, kind of like, well, what do I do? There isn't any more money I can give. So, you know, there's only one way this can end, really.
So I didn't get the money. The atmosphere was sour. But I definitely learned a few lessons in the process.
It didn't end well. Didn't start well, didn't end well. I tried to craft it such that I was smiling and positive in a soft environment. But we literally did not speak for 3 weeks, which is really, really quite hard to do in an office of six desks and three of you working in the business.
Especially if you're as chatty as I am.
It's not a great situation to be in.
Wow, that sounded difficult. Was it as bad as it sounded?
I mean, I'd like to say he's made it more dramatic than it was, but I do remember not having a positive experience.
So now, why don't we speak to someone who can tell us how to negotiate properly and prepare you for your upcoming rematch with Jez?
Great idea.
I sat down with expert negotiator Carl Maher from the Gap Partnership to get his top insights for business negotiation. Hi, Carl. Please, can you introduce yourself and your role at the Gap Partnership and explain a bit more about what the Gap Partnership do?
So, Carl Maher, senior manager at the Gap Partnership. So the Gap Partnership is a management consultancy agency. We work with organizations, helping them instill confidence in negotiation. So whether that's working with them to plan strategies or helping them with capability projects, all part of what we do.
So what made you want to do the work that you do in negotiations? What's been your journey to get where you are today?
My career has primarily been in sales, so pharmaceutical sales, technology sales, and obviously as a part of sales, there's some negotiating on the back end once the sale is complete. Fascinating how impactful you can be in negotiating once you understand the process and how it works.
You talk about the fact that 90% of a negotiation is preparation, and we'd love to hear you outline that point in more detail, perhaps going into specific examples in your experience where this has been the case and how this insight could be applied specifically to negotiating a pay rise.
Yeah, absolutely. So oftentimes when I interact with our clients in development workshops, one of the biggest challenges they point out is they don't feel prepared when they go into the workshop. Oh, that's because they're not preparing properly. Oftentimes what happens is people will go into a negotiation and oftentimes kind of wing it. They may have one or two proposals lined up before they get to the table, and then they think they can just wing it after that. You really have to prepare, put in your work before you go to the negotiation table. We say probably for every 1 hour negotiation that you do, probably need about 9 hours of preparation. So that includes understanding the counterparty, not only what their wants are, but understanding their circumstances, understanding the power dynamic, trying to predict how they are going to react during the negotiation, because that can help you formulate your strategy as well. One of the things it's really overlooked quite a bit as I interact with clients is going to the negotiation table with several different proposals already ready to go. And that takes some planning and really understanding your client. But the rationale there is once you get to the negotiation table, that frees up your mental capacity, because it is a challenge trying to figure out a proposal once you get to the table and try to go through that process. You could make mistakes in the other party's favor. So the preparation is a key to a successful negotiation.
Awesome. And you also talk about using anchoring and the extreme opening technique as a general rule for negotiations around money. Can you outline what those terms mean? Examples of how you've seen them being used, and again, how they can be used specifically when negotiating a pay rise?
So the concept of opening extreme is opening with more than what you want or what you require. That does a couple of things for you. Number one, it gives the other party satisfaction when you move from that extreme opening. One of the key facets of negotiation is really ensuring that the other party feels satisfied. The way that the other party feels satisfied is by thinking that they've moved you off of your initial position. But if you bake that movement into your strategy, you have that concession to give, they feel good, higher probability that you get what you're looking for as well. And that also goes a little bit with the anchoring concept as well, speaking more in terms of your position or your numbers rather than speaking the other party's position or numbers as well. So from a pay raise perspective, depending on the relationship that you have with your employer, whomever is in charge of giving that pay raise, it may be appropriate to open somewhat extreme. Now, depending on the relationship, it will depend on how extreme you open. So there, if it's a distant relationship, it may be appropriate to open quite extreme. But if it's a good relationship, you may want to narrow that positioning and opening extreme.
Brilliant. And another point you often highlight is the importance of negotiating with confidence. I know when we originally spoke that you mentioned important tells such as fidgeting or talking too much or avoiding eye contact. Can you talk about those and perhaps some other giveaways that a person isn't confident in a negotiation and how we can mitigate nervous body language, as well as perhaps some nonverbal cues that actually indicate confidence? Any funny or interesting examples of non-confident negotiators would be great.
It really comes down to verbal and nonverbal communication. And the reason that those tells happen is because in negotiations, it's stressful. It's a tense situation. When the body is in that stressful fight or flight type of environment, the body has to find a way to get rid of that stress. Oftentimes, it's by talking a lot or by, as you mentioned, fidgeting or scratching their face or kind of doing the bum shuffle, as we call it. Oftentimes, people aren't aware of what they do when they're under that stress. Another example is with the language that you use. You mentioned that it's important to be confident, so you want to use confident language. Oftentimes what happens in negotiations is people go into the negotiation, they will make a proposal, they will say something like, I need around $500, or I'm looking for about $500. When a skilled negotiator hears that, they now understand that person isn't confident in what they're saying because of that soft language they're using. So it's an absolute must in any type of negotiation that you're in that you use firm language. So it may go something like this. I will sell you this purse for $500. Much different than I'm looking to get around $500, right? So that confidence is key in having a successful negotiation.
And finally, are there any further general points you'd like to make around negotiation or negotiating a pay rise specifically?
Yeah, it really comes down to preparing. So one of the things that you'll want to start off by doing is understanding the landscape. What's happening in the organization? What's happening in your industry? Is there a shortage of resources, a shortage of people? Because as you start to look at it from that perspective, you may start to realize that power dynamic shifts into your favor. A big part of negotiation is understanding where that power dynamic lies. And oftentimes when we go into salary negotiations, we automatically assume that the employer has all of the power. They may be this huge organization, right? Thousands of people work within the organization. But if you take a step back and survey the landscape, is there a shortage in your role within the industry as a whole? That could start to shift that balance of power. Really understanding that you don't negotiate with an organization, you negotiate with a person. So it's important to you to understand what the needs and drivers are of that individual that you'll be negotiating that pay raise with. Also thinking about when you ask for this pay raise, how do you think your boss or HR is going to react? How do you anticipate them reacting? Because as you start to think about it from that perspective as well, that will also help you start to craft your strategy in going into that negotiation. But one aspect of negotiation that's often overlooked as well is positioning. So before you even go in to talk about the pay raise or the pay increase, what steps or actions can you take prior to that meeting to already get the counterparty or your boss in this situation to think about, hey, Carl's coming to me. I think he's going to come to me for a pay raise. How am I going to handle this? So there may be some things that you can say up until the pay raise negotiation actually happens. Maybe it's like, hey, you know what? It's really hard to find good people out here these days. But little comments or little things like that to get the counterparty to think about your position and what you are trying to accomplish as well.
Thank you so much, Carl. That was really, really interesting. I learned loads there.
My pleasure.
Awesome. So we've heard it from the expert, and there are definitely some key things in there. I really, really liked his thing about preparation. 9 hours of prep for every 1 hour of negotiation. And then also thinking about the power dynamics and the other person's circumstances. So really kind of putting yourself in their shoes, but also preempting what they're going to react with so that you can have some rebuttal up your sleeve. Okay, so let's talk about some of his points further. He talked a lot about extreme opening, and we really like to call this anchoring, don't we, Rafs? Which is that people become attached to the first piece of information they hear, and they use that to judge everything that they hear thereafter. So I think it's really interesting because it often occurs even when the initial information is irrelevant to the decision. One of my favourite studies, and I suppose the most famous example, is when people were asked to write down the last two digits of their national insurance number. And then were asked to bid on an item at auction, such as a bottle of wine. And those who had higher digits in their last two digits of their national insurance number actually paid up to 346% more than those with lower numbers. So when it comes to pay rises, I think that the first percentage that they hear has to be high because they'll be anchored on that and everything thereafter will seem far lower in comparison.
Absolutely, but I guess the nuance there is making sure that my extreme opening or the number that I'm anchoring Jez on isn't too extreme because that can undermine our relationship. We are quite close, so if I go too big, I'm just going to be sent home. So I guess it's all about being friendly. And to Carl's second point around having confidence, making sure we're not bum shuffling or speaking too fast, it's really important that I prime the conversation with the right emotions. I need to make sure that I'm not giving too many tells, but actually I am starting with information and priming Jez to think in a way that shows I'm a confident person.
And I think the final thing that was really interesting for me was how you position your own value. You know, he gave an example of, it's hard to find people like me out there nowadays. And I think psychologically, that one's quite a clever positioning statement because it plays into scarcity bias, which is the fact that we place more value on things that are scarce. So if they know that my role is more scarce and actually the market's making it more difficult, it's going to make it even more compelling to pay you what you need.
Absolutely. Why don't we have a think around some of the other psychological principles that we often talk about in this situation as well? So earlier you mentioned haptic feedback.
Yeah, and haptic feedback is fascinating. So the weight of something we can often misattribute to the price, for example. So people pay more for champagne bottles because they're heavier than wine bottles, for example.
I love this one because I actually used it at university to be a bit cheeky. So I printed my submission on paper with a really heavy weight, and then I used a font that makes the writer sound more intelligent, and it got me a great mark. So I'm really keen to try this one on Jez.
So good. And thinking about kind of the emotion that you want to drive in that room, what about nostalgia effect?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been working together for the past 8 years. So I think reminiscing about a past experience or some fond memories that we have, what that will do is it will weaken his desire to hold on to money and hopefully foster more of a social connection between us. So a really nice example of where we've used this in another environment is to get people to buy sun cream. So people typically buy sun cream in the summer to help them avoid the sun. So what we did is we created a Spotify playlist that people could scan next to the sun cream that took them back to the songs of last summer, prompting that nostalgia and meaning they were more likely to buy the sun cream.
Okay, and now just thinking about people's fear of the unknown, we often refer to that as ambiguity aversion, that We can't have the person going into the room not knowing what this meeting is about, can we? People have a real preference for things that are known, for expectations being managed around time and process, for example. So we need to give people a heads up, don't we?
Absolutely. And I guess that's why Uber's become so popular, is because you can see exactly who's going to pick you up, how far away they are. And then once you get in, you know the route. It just removes all ambiguity.
Absolutely. And then thinking about selling yourself, are you going to go into quite a lot of detail on here? Or I think less is more, right?
I think so. I mean, we often refer to it as goal dilution, but the more we often say, the less compelling it becomes. So a really nice study asked people to describe the things they love about their partner. So those who shared 7 responses, for example, they're good with kids, they always put the toilet seat down, they make me laugh, they're a great cook, they're supportive, they understand me, they make everyday fun. That compared to 3 really compelling reasons. So my partner's supportive, they make me laugh, and they make everyday fun. There's a real difference. So I don't want to dilute the quality of my work or my self-worth too much. So I think I'm going to try and stick to the power of 3.
Okay, so I feel like we've now got a lot of tips to be working with. And Rafi, you've been using all of these to prepare for your undercover pay review with Jez. How are you feeling about it? Are you confident, worried?
I'm definitely nervous, but I feel like I'm definitely going in more prepared than I was before.
Well, I guess that all that's left to do now then is to get in there and negotiate for that pay rise, Rafs. Good luck, and remember, I'm going to be listening in.
So I'm just making Jez a cup of tea. Making sure he's got something nice and warm to hold. So hopefully he's nice and warm towards me. Oh, God.
How are you feeling, Rafi?
I'm so nervous. Honestly, if it's anything like last time, this is going to be just terrifying. It's okay, I've got my big box of brochures. You'll be able to feel physically the weight of what I've done this year. And I've also prepared a number of scenarios, and I think I know how to react to them. Oh, God. I'm going to start by anchoring him on the number of days. It was actually my 8 years at Carry the other day, so I've translated that into this really big number. And then I'm also going to talk about the old office. I actually popped over to Hatton Garden the other day, and it was so nice to be back there, but I just got this wave of nostalgia, so I'm hoping that will create the same effect for him. And then I'm going to speak low. Okay, this is the room. Looks like he's in there, so let's go in. Wish me luck.
Hi, Jess.
Hey, Russ, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I've made you a tea. There you go.
That's very nice of you.
Okay, so here I am starting with haptic feedback. I've got a really heavy box of brochures, and I've also brought Jez a hot cup of tea.
Oh, I've also brought in the innovation brochures for you, which
I've
unmade.
Not seen these before. Are these new?
They are. I brought you a box of them. Thought we might want to see them ahead of the conference next week.
I've got some brains in here as well, I see.
And some brains. Hopefully it's not a stressful meeting for you, but feel free to hold on to.
Okay. Well, hopefully it's not stressful for me. Yeah, why would it be stressful? This is going to be a good conversation.
Not
I guess.
At all. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's been a really good year. So it's been a tough year, but I think that it's been a year of growth at the same time in terms of some of the things we've learned and some of the things we can do better next year.
Yeah, it'd be great to hear what your thoughts are.
Well, I was reminiscing the other day because it's the 6th of November today. And I started on the 1st of November.
You did?
In 2016. Yeah. So it's officially been 8 years or 2,922 days since we began.
Okay, so I need to get him to loosen up a little bit. So I'm going to try the nostalgia effect and try and prompt a positive memory for both of us.
I was smiling early looking at our office because obviously where we are now, we've got over 40 people, all these wonderful high ceilings and big, light, airy space. But I was thinking about our little 6-person office back on Hatton Garden.
Yeah.
And how much it's changed since then. I don't know, I just have lots of really nice memories, but it's just still amazing to think that it's been 8 years already.
It has been.
But one of the things that I did want to discuss with you as part of this yearly review is a chance for us to look at salary.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to start with a high anchor, so I'm going to go with a high number so that I can work my way back down.
With you, I would really like to ask for a 15% increase in my salary this year.
Right.
And also think of a a job title change as well.
Right.
At the moment, obviously I'm Chief Design and Innovation Officer, but I'd quite like to be Chief Insights and Innovation Officer because I feel like that's more representative of my role.
Yeah.
So I think that my skill set has changed quite a bit within the past year, and it's needed to help support us across the business in different ways.
Well, look, I mean, I do hear what you're saying, you know, and it's been tight and it's been tough. And honestly, I would love to give you a 15% pay rise, but I just don't see why now is appropriate. So I would really, really appreciate, you know, having a conversation which is more representative of where the business is in 2023. And then, yeah, for sure, if all of this amazing work in marketing and data analytics and all starts to come to fruition in January in 2024, then let's maybe have another conversation in mid-2024.
Okay, well, I mean, I can completely hear what you're saying in terms of having consideration for the wider context of the business. I do think that because my skill set has increased both in terms of new business and more disciplines, that in the current landscape, it's quite hard to find people who can do the things that I can do. So I think maybe a fairer figure is a 10% increase. So I'd quite like to explore that as an option with you.
Just feels like these figures are just coming out of the air. Like, you know, 15, 10, 5, they're quite arbitrary figures. Like, you know, I think, you know, what I'd like to see in here is 4.8. 7.4, you know, like some specificity around these figures.
I think that 10%, or we'll go for 10.2 then, if you'd like me to be exact. I think 10% is fair because that equates to approximately 5% of the revenue that I've helped generate this year. So for additional 5% growth of the business, I think that would fairly reflect the additional 5% growth in the skills that I've contributed to where the business is going. So it's not an arbitrary figure, although it may feel like it, but if you want to add on an extra point too, that's fine by me.
Yeah, no, I certainly do. I mean, that's aligning yourself to like the success and growth of the business, because ultimately business is what's benefiting is a better way than kind of solely your personal performance. So talk to me about those figures again then. So what you're saying is that 10%, 10.2% increase is just what, 5% of the value that you created for the overall business, so 1/20th.
So that 5% is the amount that I've driven on independent projects with relationships that I've grown, aside from pitches, where there is more contribution from the wider team. So I feel that has been the output of my efforts. And I don't expect you to make a decision now, but I'd like it to be something we can discuss.
I'd be happy to have a conversation, which is in January, maybe do 5%. And then depending on whether that business comes in July, when we know what half one looks like for 24, then we have another look, which is pretty unique. So it's not often that we offer kind of two bites of the cherry. It tends to be an annualised conversation. But I think hearing what you've said, that seems to be maybe more pragmatic.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Well done, Rafi. I think you did really well there. He was really playing hardball.
I know, right? I went in feeling pretty confident that I was hitting the right points and that was helping to lead the conversation. I knew where it was heading. And I was feeling in control, especially because I'd anticipated his reactions and responses. So I think it went really well, but definitely some learnings to take away too.
Yeah, so you began with haptic feedback. So you took in your heavy brochures to show the volume of work that you'd done. And you cleverly gave him a hot tea because you knew he would associate the warmth of that mug with the warmth of you as a person.
Yeah, and I think that really set the tone. I'd sent him an email beforehand to give him a heads up so he wasn't caught off guard in the first place. And then the haptic feedback put him even more at ease. He even said, this is going to be a good discussion.
So then on to the nostalgia effect. You brought him back to our little 6-person office and now we're here, 40 people global. And you reminded him of the time that he took us all to the cinema. And because that's the type of person he is, he rewards people for hard work. Now that is clever.
Yeah, so I solidified our relationship with the nostalgia effect and then used it to sort of plant the seed that rewarding people is admirable. And that meant I could then anchor him on the number of days that I've worked.
And that was so clever because I saw that you anchored him using the syllable effect. So This is all about the fact that numbers with more syllables require greater cognitive resources for us to process. So when you said 2,922 days, that was 10 syllables. So any number like a percentage increase that you said thereafter would seem tiny in comparison. Very smart. So let's talk about the figures. You used anchoring as Carl advised.
Yeah, so I went with a 15% rise, and obviously I was expecting him to come down to a place where he felt he'd successfully negotiated to a more comfortable figure. What was really interesting is he said that he'd have preferred more specific figures, so that's definitely something to consider. I guess that shows that you've really done your research and thought about your performance as a tangible projection.
And that's what managers really want to hear.
Exactly.
Well, Rafs, we caught up with Jez straight after your meeting for debrief. And to see how it all went from his perspective, and more importantly, let's see if he got that pay rise.
Hello, Jez. I'd love to know, firstly, what were your feelings towards Rafi when you were having the conversation?
It didn't feel like a confrontation. It started off like as a conversation. So, you know, just bringing a cup of tea, you know, it didn't feel like, you know, sitting at opposite ends of the table, which I've had before in some previous I think salary things where people come in and they're really quite feisty and they're ready for a fight.
Yeah.
It felt like actually this was a conversation, which I think is better. I think some of the hot points for me, as you know, like future strategy, innovation, getting me excited about those sorts of things, I think really, really does help. So yes, I think those are some of like the things that I think have been well thought out, was kind of like, this is a conversation to get to a mutually beneficial point. There's kind of layers of this discussion, which we're going to go deeper and deeper into. And then also getting me excited about things that are in the future.
So how did you feel about the actual negotiation on some percentage figures and increases?
I think we know arbitrary stuff is weird. You know, it just comes across as like figures plucked out the air. And I think when you're negotiating your self-worth, we got to a really good place around the equivalent pay rise would be like 5% of the revenue generated. Like that's a sensible conversation for a business leader, you know, as opposed to, I want this.
I suppose the million-dollar question is, compared to her previously asking for a salary increase, how did today compare to other attempts made by Rafi?
The first attempt wasn't the best, I have to say. But I think one of the things that I did like about this conversation is it was a conversation, it was structured, and it had specificity. Those are the things you really respond to.
Will you be speaking to Rafi after today?
Of course. And actually on better terms. If you negotiate well and really, really understand the value you create for you, the team and the organisation, then that interaction is going to be yet another kind of ladder or another step on the ladder for your career progression, that you just hold in that conversation in a very, very mature way, because you're going to be having that conversation with managers and seniors and consultants. So if you can have that conversation with a leader, then obviously you've got this capability to then have a conversation down the line. So in a kind of a strange kind of way, actually making it into an interaction which is structured, thought out, collegiate, more business orientated, that actually is going to help you even more. Although you might not get exactly what you think you want, actually you might get what you deserve and what you really want, which is a better relationship with your boss. You know, they're more trusting of you. And those are kind of more intangible things, but they're going to put you in good stead for the future.
Oh, that's a relief. Okay, let's recap top tips then. Tip number one, feeling is believing. Give weighty objects, or if that's not possible, a hot tea.
Second tip is start high or you're going to end up low. Go bigger than you want.
And final tip, number three, the nostalgia effect. Use it to forge a connection and start to bring down their walls. Well, thanks to behavioural science and expert advice, I was able to have a much more productive conversation and felt more in control. Hopefully all of the tips we've picked up can be used by listeners in their own high-stakes negotiations.
And thank you, Rafi, for going through all that so we don't have to.
Happy to be of service.
Thanks to Carl Maher at the Gap Partnership and to Jez Groom at Cowrey Consulting.
How to Hack the Brain is a Fascinate Productions podcast for Cowrey Consulting, part of the VCCP group. This episode was produced by Frankie Taylor, Rowan Bishop, and Richard Willen.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can press follow to be notified when a new episode lands. And if you know someone who might benefit from behavioural science tips and tricks, don't forget to hit share.
Thanks for listening and see you next time.